This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 13th, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. So, Chris, been a crazy week booking the Annie Up cruise.
Yeah, it's getting close to the deadline.
Yeah, we put out there that we only had 19 cabins left, and then the phone has not quit ringing.
People are panicking.
Yeah, so now we're down to just 10, and a bunch of people, hey, I'll call you tomorrow. So, we're not going to start the show shilling for our crews here, but there was a funny story from one of the folks that snapped up one of these nine cabins this week that made me chuckle a little bit, and it made me think a little bit more about the very brave men and women who serve our armed forces, which we talk about on the show often.
Right.
But this gentleman called me up, and, you know, of course, I always ask him what cabin they want, an inside or an ocean view, and he's like, son, I was in the Navy in the Vietnam War. Put me wherever you need me. As long as you don't make me work 40 hours a week, I'll be happy. And so I chuckled a little bit. I'm like, yeah, we're not going to put you to work. And then he's like, you know, hey, got to tell you, here's a little piece of advice you might want, son. If you're in the military, don't play poker with a staff sergeant or higher. They know what they're doing. So, you know, unfortunately, I was never in the military. I don't have a decorated record, and I probably wouldn't know a staff sergeant from sergeant of arms. But apparently, that's the cutoff. Staff sergeant higher, know what they're doing. Below that, take all their money.
Well, the other thing, too, is you really don't want to have somebody who can put you, you know, in the stockade, you know, be playing poker against you, too, if you kick their butt. You know, they might make it hard on you and throw you in the stockade. So you definitely want to be playing against guys who can't screw you either.
Well, that's true. That's true. And you know, hey, I wanted to question him a little bit, but you know, I didn't want to. You know, I didn't want to go to somewhere where I didn't really feel comfortable yet. But you know, I don't think Radar or John Candy were staff sergeants. I think they were. They were a little bit below that pay grade, weren't they?
I would think so. I think
and probably
privates.
Two of the best military poker players on TV and in movies.
Well, oh, man, I don't know about Radar, but okay, whatever.
wasn't he the one always getting the straight flushes?
Well, I'll have a little story about Radar a little later on, I think. But, no, he wasn't getting straight flushes. But he has one of my funnier moments from MASH, which I'll count down later.
Ah, okay. All right. But, you know, this whole thing, I started thinking yesterday after I got done laughing with this fine gentleman. It just made me start thinking how intertwined the military and poker are.
Yeah.
And, you know, just a couple nights ago, I watched this very great movie that for some reason I haven't watched up until now, but it's called We Were Soldiers. It stars Mel Gibson, based on a true story from the Vietnam War. And one of the scenes, I mean, this is not a movie that's full of laughs, obviously. But one scene I chuckled, you know, they're landing in Vietnam, and the choppers are flying over the base camp, and you see these the four soldiers down there playing a game of poker, and the helicopter comes right above them and just blows the cards everywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, not only is serving the military in a danger zone, I mean, in a very real sense, but it's got to be a very hard place to play poker, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The funny thing too is there were a couple of scenes from MASH that were very similar to that. One of them was they're in a foxhole and they got the chips and they got the cars and it's like three guys in the foxhole and they're like, hey, what are the denominations again? And then I think it's Hawkeye. He says, if we die, the blues are 1,000, the reds are 5,000, and the whites are 10,000. But if we win, the whites are $1, the blues are 50 cents, and the reds are 5. Yeah, and it's hilarious. It's just like, and then the helicopter lands and it blows the cars over. But that was one of my favorite scenes, you know. It's like, yeah, if you're going to die, you might as well make it exciting. Same thing, though. You know, the helicopter comes in or whatever. There's another scene, too, where they're waiting for someone to show up and they're on the helipad with Margaret and stuff like that. They played poker in that show like every other episode, and it just totally goes to show you that, you know, that's what the military did when they weren't, they weren't saving lives or whatever.
And, we have one of our great NAM nationals, Brian, who used to live down here in Tampa. He's getting ready to take command of an entire ship.
Yes.
Up in Virginia here pretty soon. So that's right. The NAM Nation is going to have its own Navy pretty soon.
I feel bad for him, too, because he emailed us. He's like, I'm leaving Florida just when they finally get uncapped poker, and I get to Virginia, and they shut down the Virginia poker rooms. It's got the worst timing ever. Hopefully he won't have that timing when it actually comes to fruition in the military for him.
Yeah, I'm just going to go out on a limb here, but I got to think that our friend Brian probably has enough firepower at his disposal to kind of change the mind of that Commonwealth attorney that shut the rooms down there. You know, if he wanted to use it. I mean, obviously, I'm not advocating that, just a mere suggestion for him.
Dear Mr. Mobley, I have a big gun, and it's aimed at your office. Care to change your mind? Speaking of radar too, there was a scene with radar that really cracked me up in MASH. It's this scene where they have the long johns in the movie. I don't know if you ever watched the show, but that one time Hawkeye gets these long johns, and it's freezing over in Korea. Everybody knows that the winters were brutal there, and the summers were really hot too. So he gets these long johns and he wins them, and then Trapper John gets sick, so he gives them to him so he could stay warm and get healthy, but he doesn't give them to him permanently. But, Trapper John is like the worst poker player in the entire show. And he's playing against Radar. And he's like, hey, you want to play these? And he opens up his shirt. And Radar feels the material of the long johns, to cover the bet. And so Radar's like, okay, that's cool. So he says, I call or whatever. And Trapper John says, full house. So he starts raking in the pot. And then Radar says, oh, okay, you win. And that's when, Hawkeye says, well, what'd you have, Radar? He said, I had two pair. And then they, what were your pair? He goes, tens. And he, what were your other pair? He goes, that's it. Two pair, tens. Two red tens and two black tens. And then that's it. When he realizes he wins, he starts grabbing the buttons on the shirt of Trapper John, trying to grab the long johns off. And then you hear my favorite line ever on MASH from Hawkeye. He says, you just lost my hand-woven long johns to an astigmatic missing link with four tens. It's like the greatest line ever, poker. But, yeah, I'm glad you brought this up because that's one of my favorite shows of all time. And, man, it's just – you always hear stories about, Nixon, and everybody playing poker on ships. And it was funny because I have a brother-in-law who came to town, like, last year and – he found out about me in the magazine and the show and all that stuff. He's like, oh, really? Well, I play a lot of cards, too, and when I was in the Navy. And, he's a career man, and he retired and everything. And I was like, all right, you want to play some cards? He's like, yeah. So, I mean, I destroyed him. And I thought, man, you're a career man. You couldn't have been higher than a staff sergeant if I beat you that bad. But they played weird games. They played, like, Roll Your Own and all that stuff,
Yeah. And it always seems like people say that I played poker in the Navy. I never hear I played poker in the Marines or
yeah,
or in the Army or in the Coast Guard. It's always in the Navy. So maybe it's just because you're on a ship. You got nothing else to do.
Yeah, really. While you're traveling over there, whatever.
Of course, if you're on a sub, I guess you don't have to worry about the helicopter blowing your cards away. So maybe it does make it a little easier if you're in the Navy.
You got to worry about that scope, though, coming up and down and I don't know.
Real quick mention again, reminder to the crews, as I mentioned, we are down to just 10 cabins left. So if you've diddle daddled and want to get on the ship, it's time to quit diddle daddling and give me a call and go to antiantmagazine.com/cruise for that number and all the details for the October 25th cruise. And just in case you're like, you know what? I really don't trust Scott and Chris. I think they are selling us a load of BS. That I'm going to get on the ship. I'm going to have a terrible time. I'm going to waste all my money. Here is an independent voice that called in our good friend Jason Holly, the great creator of those J-Design playing cards. He sailed on the last two cruises. Can't make it this one. But here is a ringing endorsement from someone that hopefully the nation does trust.
Hey, guys. This is Jason Holly with J-Design Playing Cards. Just wanted to give you a big shout-out for everything that you do on the PokerCast. And just want to give a shout-out to Chris up in British Columbia, who also phoned in for a little shout-out to J-Design Playing Cards. So I just wanted to say thank you so much for everything that you do. And to everyone that's listening to the PokerCast, you've got to go on the Poker Cruise because it's a blast. If you are still deciding, decide now to go with only, 14 cabins left. I won't be going on this one, but it is a blast to go. And the staff that runs it, both Cassie and Jody, are phenomenal, as well as all the dealers. They round up to go on this thing. It's amazing. So come on board. Have a great time.
Awesome. Got to love the impartiality of Jason Holly for us.
And the other funny call I got this week, I got one of a couple that sailed with us on the first cruise and couldn't make it the second one. They're rebooked on the third one. And right before, I'm like, hey, any more questions? And she's like, yeah, I do have one, Scott. Who's doing the dining room assignments this time? And I'm like, well, that would be me. And she's like, wow, I would really, really, really like it if you could put us next to that very nice guy that designs the really cool cards. Jason Holly, is that his name? And I'm like, yes. And I'm like, you know, ma'am, I will do anything I can to make your cruise as enjoyable as possible. But unfortunately, Jason has to work and can't make it. And she was really bummed. I almost thought she was going to cancel the cruise. And then I was going to have to kick Jason's butt. But she's going to come on anyhow. And I'm like, you know, hey, I don't know. Jason, maybe he might send a friend or something. We'll put them at the table. It won't be the same. Maybe a cardboard cut out of them or something. But, hey, so the love goes both ways, Jason.
He's a good guy, and I can see why they'd want to sit with him, you know.
All right, well, Apes was Wednesday night.
Yep.
And, you know, again, I thought I was on a roll. This is a game that I like to play. I was watching Rocky Balboa last night, you know, AJ Benza.
Yeah.
And, the underdog coming back. And that's how I felt. I got short stack pretty early. I just, all those, you know, missing the river cards, 678 outs, times six.
times
missing
six.
Them all. And then I came back and I was the chip leader for a while. And then just ended up dumping chips again. It's a little bell curve last night, you know, not catching my river card and catching a lot of river cards and then not catching my river cards. And I dumped a bunch of my chips off to Rant 21-12 and went on to win it. But I imagine the entire nation that was sticking around was watching it to see whether Mr. Cosenza was going to be the first Andy Post to actually win a banana.
I will never be confused with Kara Sedgwick. Because I certainly am not the closer. Twice this year I've made the final table. Twice I made it to the top four. Twice while we were at the top four I was chip leader. And twice I finished fourth. I don't know what to say. It seems like every time I get to the money and I get to the final table, I get real aggressive with a hand. And it was Godar, actually, that thrashed me on one hand. I had pocket aces with a deuce showing, and he had like a nine showing. And I was like, all right, I completed the bet. I think it was Rant who brought it in. I completed it, or maybe it was Rant. Or maybe I had the deuce, and I completed it to start. I can't remember, but it was four-handed. And Godar called, and it was like the next card he gets was like an eight, and I get like another ace. So I have three aces and a deuce on 4th Street, and I'm like, all right, he's going to go away now. I got ace, deuce showing low. He's got like two middling cards. So I bet, because I have the highest hand showing, and he calls, and I'm like, all right, on the 5th Street, I get like another wheel card or something. So I'm like ace, deuce, four showing with two aces in the hole. I bet, and he raises me because he got like a jack, and I'm like, or a 10. And I'm like, do you really have, it might have been like 6, 9, 10. He had 7, 8 in the hole. He made a straight on 5 cards, and we had gotten it all in. So I didn't pair the board, and he scooped. I didn't make a low, and he scooped, and we actually traded position at the final table. And then from there, I hung on for a while, but I always pick one hand. I really thought, and that was a problem too, Sky. I was like you. I started having visions of you handing me the banana and me, you know, putting it in the magazine. And, you know, and Rant had asked me during the night, Chris, have you ever won a banana? And I didn't see the remark because I was doing something else. And later on, I saw him write in, well, I guess he's not answering me. And I said, oh, I wonder if he's talking to me. So I scrolled back in the chat, and they had this whole conversation about you're trying to jinx him, and they're all talking about me, and I have no idea. So I didn't answer him. I didn't say anything. And then when we got to the final four, I typed in, Rant, have you ever won a banana? And he said yes. So I was like, I know. I was just trying to jinx you, whatever. But it turns out I jinxed myself. I did not win. I finished fourth, and hats off to Rant. He really destroyed the tournament, really. I mean, he was always near the top and always in command, it seemed like. It seemed like every hand that he went to the end, he at least split. He hardly ever got scooped. But actually, I actually took the chip lead for him, I think, on one hand and then lost it again at the final table. So it was pretty frustrating, but, you know, it's my favorite game. And I said to Jean, my wife, before it started, she's like, oh, what's the game tonight? And I said, stud eight. And I didn't say anything. And she says, isn't that your game? And I said, yeah, I guess. Don't put any more pressure on me. But I was glad I made the final table. And it was odd. I couldn't believe how fast you went down. It must have been a huge hand because you were at like 7,800 chip leader. Yeah. And then I got moved to your table like minutes later, and you had like 500 or something. I must have been a huge hand.
Yeah, it was actually two hands in a row.
Two hands in a row.
I all night I was getting like 3, 4, 5 to start with. And I couldn't get there either way. And then, you know, of course, I make these hero calls with a pair of fives on the end against somebody who I think is going low.
Yeah.
And, of course, they have a pair of sixes to scoop.
Yeah.
And then when I'm in a hand with Rant, he wins the high with a pair of fours. So, I mean, Rant did not call in, but he did write in to say that he destroyed the final table and then went on to apologize for being an ass, but was just so darn excited. And why not? You know, I get a plastic banana now. So
yeah, really.
You could be excited. You know, another funny thing, I had a hand early on where I got some chips against who probably thinks I'm his arch nemesis now, Burns My Toast.
Oh, yeah.
And I really thought it was like the most disguised hand ever. It was just amazing how this hand developed for me. But I started with buried jacks, raised it because it had folded around. I think we got heads up with Toast. Picked up a third jack on 5th Street and like a deuce on 6th Street and then rivered a deuce. So my up cards looked like crap. And he had like 3 clubs, including an ace. I'm sure he had a flush. I didn't go back and check. But on the end, he raised me, I raised him, boom, chips came my way, and he was like, whoa. And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, no idea. Didn't see it coming, did you?
I typed that in a couple of times last night to fellow players at the table. I was like, wow, I didn't see that coming, or wow, nice hand, that was well disguised, you know, because a lot of times you can't tell. And I wasn't necessarily in the hands of those people, just I'm watching it, because, you know, I've heard you say this too, when you play stud eight, if you're not in the hand, you still kind of pay attention because you're, like, dying to know what way they're going and, you know. But a couple of notes from last night. One, I was rolled up 4 times last night, Scott.
Wow, not once for me. Not once.
4 times. And every time except once, I scooped with it. One time I split. And I made quads once and split. Quad fours. And then the other times I won. I played them all differently, too. I played them fast once. I played them slow. I disguised it like a low. You know, I did all these weird things to try to get as much out of them as I could, but I couldn't believe it. I had to keep, like, blinking harder and harder to make sure I was focusing correctly that I did have 3 kings, and that's how I knocked out F. Rice 88 last night. He had an ace show, and I had a king, and I completed with rolled-up kings, and he got it all in with aces, and then I turned over all of them, and they're all like, oh my god, whoa. So I couldn't believe it. Like 3 times at the final table, too, was when I got them. And a couple of noteworthy knockouts, too. I knocked out Poker Geek MN, which was a bracelet winner, or a banana winner. I knocked out Colombo, a banana winner. I knocked out Scott 25C Snuffy, a banana winner. That was pretty cool. I'm like, oh my god, it's destiny. I'm going to win a banana.
Yeah, if it was a banana bounty tournament, you would have a whole bundle.
I'd have a bunch of bananas. Oh, man. But it was a real good tournament, and I was happy that I made the final table again. And, I mean, you know, all that. I really like a 30-40-player tournament.
I was just going to say, I would have liked to see more players. But, yeah, I get what you mean by the
I seem to do better on those. I don't know why. It seems easier to outlast 25 people than it does to outlast 700, you know.
Well, chip stacks don't get so crazy as they do when you have 200 people in there, you know.
Yeah.
You
get
a luck box hitting everything, and they come to your table, and they got 24,000, and you've got your starting stack of 2,000. It's a little tougher to do that in a 30-player tournament, especially a limit one. But
yeah, and a stud tournament, too. I mean, really, if you're not the bring-in, you could sit there and really pick your hand if you're short, you know. So that's always what's cool about it, too.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we've got more events coming up. Next one will be Saturday, August 28th at noon. Good old-fashioned No Limit Hold'em. And don't forget that you can win your seat in that free roll Saturday, August 21st at noon. Always on PokerStars. Go to anteupmagazine.com/apes, AIPS. Get all the information, including the passwords right there. And we'll see who wins the next banana.
All right, let's see what's happening on the AnteUp News Desk.
Harrah's and 888.com have announced that they'll launch a free-to-play poker site aimed at U.S. players, Card Player Reports. The duo also said it will launch a for-money site in the United Kingdom market very soon.
It's only a matter of time, buddy. Only a matter of time.
It's getting there. They're moving their chess pieces into place.
Also,
we'll be all ready.
Also with Harrah's this week, didn't they finalize the Rio sale, that they're not going to have the World Series at the Rio anymore? And
you know, I haven't seen that, but I'll put that on the news desk next week.
Yeah,
let's get out there and investigate.
Newshound, put on your hat and get out there and see what's going on. The World Poker Tour has announced a deal with the Seminole Tribe to co-brand some of the tribe's rooms here in Florida, and also will stage the Seminole Hard Rock Showdown at Seminole Hard Rock Hollywood, April 27 to May 3rd. Big news.
Yeah, people here in Florida are buzzing about this. We kind of had some inside information. We knew this was coming. We just didn't know when it was going to be called and what the date was. But obviously, I mean, when the limits changed, this is what everybody here in Florida wanted, in addition to being able to play poker like they wanted to. They want to win these big events to come to the state, and this obviously will be the first one, and will probably be a pretty big deal down in South Florida, where, you know, Mike Maddisau just won a tournament this week as well, too, at the Isle, the Florida State Championships.
Yeah, he won the main event, like 103 grand, and, you know, I tell you, that the big names are having their impact. Noah Schwartz won the Summer Open at the Hard Rock, and, you know, the Grinder and Mercier and Chino Ream, all those guys are playing in all these events. It's making a big deal down here. It's pretty exciting. And doesn't this story sort of make you wish that we were yellow journalists once in a while and we could have announced this World Poker Tour thing like months ago? But we just didn't want to do it because we're legitimate journalists. You know, I mean, we've known about this for a while, but we couldn't say anything.
With 500-point type on the cover of the magazine. Poker! An exclamation point. All right, finally, a New Mexico prosecutor has agreed to a deal that will allow an ex-stockbroker, Samuel McMaster Jr., to play poker to try to recover some of the $444,000 he owes in restitution to victims of his 26 felony charges of securities fraud. That comes from ABC News.
Holy cow.
Yeah, talk about, you know, boy, this guy, I don't know how much he's paying his attorney. But he needs to pay him more.
That's a great settlement.
Hopefully he'll go on a good run in a tournament. He'll win more than $444,000 given to the victims and give the rest to the lawyer. Because this guy, can you imagine this negotiation? I know our guy totally screwed the pooch on all these people. And they have no homes or anything left. But how about this? How about we let him go to Vegas? And let him try to win that money back. What do you think about that? I mean, wow, just the cojones to even attempt that negotiation and then have them go, you know what? Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Have fun.
Do you think, like, this guy had to, like, play the judge in his chambers to prove that he could play poker or something?
Yeah, I mean, that's what's going to be the funny thing is this guy's going to go there and go on a cold streak. Probably rob 6 or 7 banks or something, and then he'll go to the next judge and go, hey, wait a minute. You know, hey, last time. Didn't quite work out, but you got to trust me, this time, I'm really going to win.
I'm sure this guy's going to go back to all of the people that he frauded and say, hey, can you guys stake me so I can win your money back? I'm going to start playing 1-3 at Harrah's, and hopefully somebody will straddle for 6 so I can get more money in the pot to win you guys back your money.
Yeah, I can see a boy, do I have a deal for you. Now, I know that last time, I know that med stock that I got off of watching Boiler Room went south. But this time, this is a sure bet. You just give me all the rest of your money that you got from working the lemonade stand this week, and I'm going to go to the Bellagio, and you are going to be so happy.
Now, I know Ben Affleck was in Boiler Room. I don't want you to get worried because Ben Affleck's a poker player, but we have this all lined up out there. We're going to have some collusion. Oh, no collusion. No, you didn't hear me say that. I'm just going to win you some money, so can you kick me off with a grand?
Oh man! That might be one of the top 10 poker stories of the year.
Well, speaking of a top 10 poker story, we have an interesting hotline clip from Brett Ott, one of our longtime listeners. Phone number is 813-448-1120, and he made a trip to Kansas City. Let's see what happened to him.
Hey guys, Brett Ott, Lincoln, Nebraska. I just got back from a 4-day trip to Kansas City and played in 6 tournaments. I listened to the PokerCast on the way down and again on the way back, and I got to say, I think it was one of the most well-rounded and hilarious episodes. It's definitely in my top 5, so really great job, guys. It's been a while since I played live, and I had forgotten how playing live is different than playing online, in that, like Faso said, there's always some characters. I found myself naming everyone at the table to make my play history easier to remember. The lead singer from Metallica, next to Billy Connolly, next to Samuel L. Jackson from Pulp Fiction. Then there was Alan Funt, followed by Peter Lawford, Skeletor from He-Man, some D-bag from Jersey Shore, and the horny lady to my left who kept putting her hand on my knee whenever she had a great hand. I used her tell right away as she showed me winner after winner, and she was always telling the truth. But how do you address if some lady keeps touching you at the table? How do you handle it, Scott?
What do you do when someone keeps touching you? all right, first thing, the most important thing, is to assess the beauty of said touchy. If she's hot, this is what I do. I engage her in a little small talk, find out about her upbringing, you know, maybe what her favorite bottle of wine is, where she wants to go to eat later on, and, you know, make the best of it.
Did you almost say get a room? Did you almost say that?
No. That's completely up to her. I'm not going to be pushing that on her on the first date, but, if things progress, then yeah, you know, I'll return the touching favor, absolutely.
Okay, now I'll give the married guy answer. You tell the dealer you want a table change.
Table change.
Yeah, a seat change. You want to get up and move. You don't want this person touching you anymore.
maybe I'll excuse myself, go to the restroom, come out, and have, the toilet paper stuck under my, under the pants leg, and then kind of wrap it up where the touching is going on. Maybe stop at the snack bar on the way out, buy, maybe a Hershey bar or something. Kind of art that toilet paper up a little bit. That will probably take care of the problem.
You could just sneeze on her.
But see, here's the thing. Brett would not have to stop at the snack bar to get a chocolate bar. And you know why, Chris?
Why is that?
Because his on-screen name is Sexual Chocolate.
Oh, man.
I keep trying to give him the myth that he named himself after the awesome house band on Coming to America.
Yep.
And he keeps dancing around and saying, yeah, kind of. But I don't believe it. I mean, it's S chocolate. But it has to be Sexual Chocolate.
Could be Swiss chocolate.
So, and I wonder if it's actually Brett that was the one doing the touching here,
Hey, I've seen him on TV. It's possible.
Those Hand of the Weeks where they send us in the Hand of the Week. And at the end, they're like, twist!
Yeah.
I'm the villain! I think that's gonna be next week's hotline call. Hey guys, it's Sexual Chocolate here, and I was the one all over the guy.
Yeah, and I'm using my one phone call from jail to call you to tell you that I'm in here on harassment charges from touching the person. Well, what did he win? Actually, I know what he won. I love the gift, so it's pretty hilarious.
Here's the thing. We are going to send him a T-shirt from PMS Pokerware. They sell hilarious shirts for guys and gals at PMSPokerware.com. And I need to accentuate the guys part of this.
Yeah.
You know, last week's winner,
what am I going to do with the chick shirt?
Just rewind. Let's listen to it again. Hilarious shirts for guys and gals. Guys and gals. So they have some unisex shirts there. We'll be sure that Brett gets a nice hot pink shirt, though. And maybe one that doesn't accentuate his positive attributes so he doesn't get touched anymore when he's...
I don't know, though. If it's a lady's shirt, ladies might want to be touching it to see if they like it.
That's true. But remember to call 813-448-1120, and you too might win a lovely T-shirt from PMS Pokerware or one of our other fabulous swag shelf items.
A mailbag comes from Pittsburgh this week. It's from Mike P. He says, poker has arrived in Pittsburgh, and that makes me happy.
Makes us happy, too.
I've been to the Rivers Casino a couple of times already, and he likes the room a lot. But one thing, if there would be anything different... one thing that threw him a bit was
Come
the
on,
fact
read
that...
It. Huh? Read the cue card.
One thing that threw him a bit was the fact that the lowest known limit game was 1-3 and not 1-2. It's not a big change, and the play is pretty much the same. Just wondering if there would be anything different you guys would do in a 1-3 instead of a 1-2. I think pretty much the only change I made is I'm less apt to put money in from the small blind because now it's $2 more instead of $1. What do you think, Scott?
This is an interesting question because, when we started our Antioch Poker Cruise, 10 cabins left, call today. our poker manager said, hey, we're going to deal 1-3 instead of 1-2. And I'm like, I really don't care. I'm not going to play 1-2 or 1-3, so it doesn't matter to me.
Right.
But why? And he's like, hey, it plays a little bit bigger.
Yep.
And I'm like, really? The extra buck makes it play bigger? And then, you start doing the math, and it's true. I mean, if you do a standard raise to $6 in a 1-2, and of course, there's no such thing as a standard raise in a cash game to $6. It's more like 10 or more. That one extra dollar actually changes it. So now you're talking 9, which really is probably 15 or 20. And then it just builds from there. The pot keeps getting built bigger. The flop, now there's more money in, so the flop bets are bigger, and then turn bets are bigger. So, I guess that's what I would say as a total no-limit player. Just understand the pots are going to get bigger, so you might want to play tighter if you're worried about that, or you might want to take advantage of it and play more aggressive if you like that.
Well, when he asks what I would do differently, I would probably buy in for more.
Yes.
I don't want to have a $100 stack in a 1-3 game when I can have a $300 stack or a $200 stack at least. So if it's allowed, yeah, you want to buy in for more because the game's going to play bigger and they're going to be bigger pots and you're going to want to be prepared for those. So that's what I would do. And I believe me, the 1-3 games definitely play different than the 1-2s. He says pretty much the same, but over the long haul, it'll definitely separate itself from a 1-2 game because eventually everyone will understand that the raises are 9 to $15 and $15 to $20, and it's just exponentially bigger than a 1-2. So just be prepared for it with the right buy-in.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's just because, poker in the casino is new in Pittsburgh area and people, trying to get used to it. It's probably as low as limit game. People are probably still playing the same way. It's not as if they had a 1-2 and now all of a sudden walked in one day and go, hey, new and improved. 1-3, no limit now. his last little comment from a limit standpoint, if you ever in a limit game, does make sense that, when you have those limit games where it's like 1-3 blinds versus 2-4 blinds, the money does make difference. That extra buck or two will make you play a little tighter on the small blind, which I say is never a bad thing.
Yeah. Just look at it like the cost of doing business. Give it up because it's not really worth defending.
All right, Mike, well, we appreciate you writing in, and we are going to extend you a free download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro Hand History Analysis Program for single or mixed games, including 1-2 and 1-3 no limit, Chris. and that comes from our good friends at element26.net. That's element26.net. Check that out and get your own Poker Hand Breakdown Pro or email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com if you're cheap and don't want to buy anything.
And that's not all. Buy today and we'll send you completely free.
Ever thought that some offers are just too good to be true?
Yes, that's an incredible 42-piece set for only $19.95. Yes, you heard us.
That you don't generally get something for nothing?
Free! Free! Free!
Well, at PokerStars, you actually do. Because the minute you sign up as a real money player, you automatically join our VIP club and start earning player points towards hundreds of items, from plasmas to Porsches to seats at major poker tournaments. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to see why our rewards program makes other offers seem, well, a lot of hot air. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people have been wondering what happened to our one-minute mystery. It will return next week. The detective has been taking a little bit of a break, but he tells us he's raring to go, going to get us another episode next week, so stay tuned for that. But, you know, Scott, I wanted to let you know that I had a nice little interview this week with a fantastic poker pro that people may or may not even know about. His name is Tyler Smith. Have you ever heard of Tyler Smith, Scott?
I have, because I own a poker magazine, and I just saw a news item in our own magazine about it.
Well, this kid is great. He's young, and he's really aggressive. He'll even admit to it in the interview that we're going to play here. And the reason why we have him on the show is he really has gone on an unprecedented tear through Mississippi lately. You know, Mississippi always hosts these nice tournaments at the Bow and the Gold Strike. In January, they had the Southern Poker Championships, which is the WPT event. He makes the final table there. Then, a few months later, in April, they had the Spring Break Poker Classic back at the Bow, another one of their big events, one of their three big events there. He wins it, right? And then a month later, he plays at the Gold Strike, a month and a half later, plays at the Gold Strike, plays in the World Poker Open. Oh, and he wins that one, too.
Yeah.
So this kid is just incredible right now, and it's a real interesting story. And pay attention toward the end. He tells me what his greatest poker moment is, and it's not what you think it would be. So without further ado, here's my interview earlier this week with Tyler Smith, the professional poker player from Mississippi. How did you get started? It was just a boom? Did you play with your friends? How'd that work out?
We started when it was in my senior year, like close to the end of my senior year. There was a class where we didn't really do anything.
Okay.
And we played hearts and spades and stuff, just me and my friends in the back of this classroom. And one day we got kind of tired of playing those games, and somebody was like, well, let's play hold'em. And they taught me how to play in the back of the classroom.
Were you playing for money at the time, too, or was it just to kill the time?
Yeah, we were playing for, like, pennies. We would just whatever change like we had in, you know, in our vehicles or whatever, just in the cup holder we would put in our pockets before we came into school that day or something, and just play for $2 or $3, you know, and change.
Oh man. You know, one of the things I always like to ask players of your caliber too is, you started playing with those kind of stakes. When you play like cash games or when you play in these big tournaments like that, do you ever like just sit back and think, good God, that's a lot of money that I'm playing for? You know, even though you're used to it now, does that ever come into your mind? Like, oh my God, I'm betting a car here or something like that.
I don't know if I'm just a little different or, you know, if I got started and it seems like I kind of started from, you know, I kind of worked my way up. I mean, I started out playing really, really small and then I just gradually moved up. So I don't know if I don't ever think like that. I just have a disregard for money, I think, when it comes to poker. I can pretty much, like, set it all aside and just play the game.
Okay,
I think it's in my mind, like, the money's just how you keep score.
Right, okay.
I don't ever look at, like, oh, I just, you know, I lost a car. And I just kind of play.
Why do you think, because we're going to get into your recent success, why do you think you're on such a tear lately? I mean, you've put up some incredible numbers since the start of the year.
I guess it's due to, you know, like, I mean, I pretty much live it. I mean, my friends and I, we play all the time, and I have a pretty good set of friends, and I guess we all help each other out some. been pretty fortunate to run into people I've run into. I mean, I couldn't have gotten to where I'm at without having those people. It's not like you just wake up and you're born a great poker player. You have to put time into it and work at it, just like anything else. I mean, you kind of get out of it what you put into it, and I've put a lot into it. I mean, when I was in college or anything like that, I mean, I literally didn't have a life. I never went out. I never partied. I never did anything. On a Friday night, I was in my room playing online poker. I mean, I played every day, every minute that I had to spare, I pretty much played. And since then, or since I've, I guess, quote-unquote, like, turned professional, that's just the way it's been. I've worked hard at it. You know, there's something about... I'm pretty... Now my mind's blank for some reason. I've got an obsessive personality. Like,
okay.
I get involved with something, I just can't really let it go. Like, I really, really love basketball. I enjoyed it. So I practice all the time. I mean, it was like my poker when I was 15, you know?
Yeah.
I just played all the time. I put a lot of time into it. And I guess the love kind of wore off for it. Or I found something new. I just, like, poker was what it was, and I picked it up, and I just ran with it. Like, I didn't stop. And poker and basketball have actually been pretty similar. You know, it's like, poker's competitive, too, and I'm really competitive. So as soon as the basketball kind of wore off, it was like I got my competitive drive, like, through poker, you know, kind of feel it, you know, so...
Sounds really similar to Paul Wasika too. I've talked to him a few times and had him in our magazine a couple of times, and it's the exact same thing where he had this competitive drive where he was really good at, you know, say a sport, and would get so good at it that he'd feel like he sort of mastered it and then was looking for the next best thing, and then it was, you know, blackjack, and then it was poker, you know, that kind of thing.
No, that's exactly what it is. It was kind of like I was just done with it. I was kind of over it.
Right.
And I didn't want to play anymore, and I fell in love with poker too, so I was playing a lot, and I just had other things on my mind, and that's exactly what it is.
Do you now still like play though to stay in shape, or do you have friends who play? You miss it at all?
Actually, last night somebody was asking me about that. No, I don't. I probably haven't played 10 times since I quit.
Wow.
Maybe 15 times, you know. I mean, it's pretty rare. I can think on one occasion this past year when I went to play basketball, maybe twice. No, and that's something I could work on a little bit. I'm not in the best shape of my life, for sure.
let's talk about this recent win. Tell me a little bit about you know, your process along, you know, how it went along the way, and, you know, getting to the final table. Were there any key hands, things like that, that came up that you'd want to talk about?
Actually, like, when you say that one hand comes up, and it was really early, it was probably the first or second level of the day. I had Frank Casella at my table, and I'm pretty aggressive.
Right.
I guess the word's probably out. I would say, like, me and Faraz Jocko are probably the wildest players on the tour.
Wow.
But I was opening probably, like, 80 or 90% of the pots, and three-betting a lot. And Frank Casella, he opened, and I was actually down to, like, 12 or 13K. I'm going to probably butcher the numbers because I can't really remember. But
right.
I think that the blinds were 100, 200 pre-ante, and he made it 500. And I'm in the cutoff. I had King Jack, and I made it maybe 1300, and both back to him, and he calls, and the flop comes King High. He checks, and I bet 1350, and he made it 3000. And I clicked it back at him to try to induce him to shove, and there was two diamonds on board too. It was like King 8-4 or something with two diamonds.
Okay.
Whatever. The two other cards just really don't matter that much. It was King something something with two diamonds. And he I made it like 4900, just 1900 on top of his 3000. 2000.
Right.
And he just snap shoved, and I called him off, and he had ace queen.
Oh.
No diamonds or anything, and I wound up holding up. So I doubled up to like 25,000, and it was pretty much like, I don't think I ever really went back since then. I mean, it was just one of those tournaments where my style just worked for me. Like, I open a ton of pots, and it's, you know, people just, they just didn't have hands. That's what it boiled down to. I mean, I three-bailed several times and didn't get called. That's kind of what it was.
The last three big caches that, you know, all happened in the South, and a lot of your caches, I checked them on Hendon Mob too. A lot of them are from, you know, the area. You do really well near home and stuff. Do you think that has anything to do with why you do so well? Because you're so comfortable at home? I mean, it just seems like, oh my God, home cooking really serves you well.
Yeah, you know, it could be. I just don't, I don't really enjoy traveling that much, and I actually don't travel that much. Pretty much, like, the only reason why you see my, I have results down here is because I don't enjoy it. I'm happy in Mississippi. I love it in Biloxi. It's a great place.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I just like to stick around here, so that's kind of what I do. I just play online and play some cash around here, try to hit the main events and stuff, and that's what I enjoy doing, so that's what I do. But I do think it does. It makes a difference because I'm so happy here. I'm always in a good mood. I love it here. You know, I go to Vegas every summer, and I've actually never had a good summer in Vegas. Never had a winning trip. I've lost a good bit of money over the course of like the last three summers.
Right.
But it's not a good fit for me. I don't. You know, I enjoy being out there, and I enjoy a change. It's fun for a while, but it's grueling, and I don't enjoy that. It's just not for me, you know. So
yeah.
That's probably a big reason why I haven't done well. It's just because, you know, I'd rather be at home than I'm out there playing poker. You gotta enjoy what you're doing. You gotta have fun with it, or at least I do. If I don't, then I'm not gonna do my best. I'm not gonna play my best. I just seem to not play as good as I can whenever I'm away from home.
Will it ever bother you though? Not if you I see you don't go there that often, so will it bother you to not win a bracelet in your career if that happens?
No way.
No, okay. No. Cool.
Definitely not. You know, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
I noticed all your caches on Hendon Mob are No Limit Hold'em. Do you play other games too, though?
I don't. I've actually never played a tournament that isn't No Limit Hold'em.
Wow.
But I have played. I have played TLO, and I'm certainly not saying I know what I'm doing because I don't think I'm very good, but I've actually played pretty high online, and I've done all right. But I play cash, you know. I play cash, PLO, but that's about it.
That's about it. None of the stud games are mixed games.
I wouldn't even know how to start playing a stud game. I wouldn't even know how the cards are dealt.
Oh my God!
No. I did an interview for something, I can't remember what, but they were asking me, like, what was my, you know, some goals or ambitions or whatever as far as poker goes, and I did say, you know, I'd like to be a good poker player. Right now, I'm just a good hold'em player.
Yeah.
I don't even think I'm a great hold'em player. I think I'm good, but I'd like to be a great, like, all-around player. I'd like to play all the games well, but I got a long way to go.
And you spend so much time playing Hold'em that it's probably hard to find time to learn these other games.
Yeah. It's taken me so long to, I guess, get to where I'm at in Hold'em. I don't know. It just seems like I don't want to go through it again, really.
Okay, last question. What's your greatest poker moment?
Think about this one for a second.
Okay.
I remember when I was 21. Oh, wow, yeah, never mind. This is probably I was going to say, I remember when I was 21 and I won a ring in New Orleans. It was a pretty big, like, boost to my bankroll at the time. I won a 1K over there, and it was 88,000 first. And that was, like, a few months after I turned 21.
Right.
But when I was 18 or maybe 19, I remember being at home, and I was playing online a ton. I guess I'd have to be 19. I won a seat in the a tournament online. It was a $100,000 guaranteed tournament, and I won it through reward points, you know?
Yeah.
So you, like, play a satellite with these points, and you get into a tournament, and then, you know, you satellite your way into a satellite for the tournament. And I won a seat, so I was just, like, so excited about it. But I wound up getting second in this tournament, and I was the only one at home. I was at my parents' house, and I was actually in my little sister's bedroom because she had the computer set up in there, so I was playing in her room. And she was gone, my mom and dad were gone, and I wound up getting second in this tournament for $15,000.
Oh my god.
And actually the guy that beat me was Daniel Kelly.
Oh my god.
JK.
Oh my god.
And you know how much older I am than he is.
Yeah.
So he was most likely, I mean, he was in high school. So he beat me, and he got $25,000. I got $15,000, and I actually remember asking him heads up. I was like, "Do you want to chop this thing up?" And he was like, "No, I'll just take the $25,000." He was like leagues ahead of me.
Oh my
god! I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I was awful, but I luck boxed my way to it and got second. I remember when I got second, the, you know, it would pop up on your screen, "Congratulations, $15,000 has been credited to your player account or whatever." And I just, like, I fell back on my little sister's bed with my arms, like, spread open, and I was, like, looking up at the ceiling, and I was, like, smiling. I was like, no way this is real.
Oh, my God.
There's no way this is real. I was like, I'm rich. And I remember calling my grandpa and being like, look, I just won $15,000. What am I going to do? I'm never going to have to work again. You know? I mean, I've never had more than, like, $1,000 to my name, you know? So I thought I'd really struck it big. But it didn't take me but about, and this is why I probably, I don't have regard for money. I don't really think about it when I lose, I don't guess, because it takes me long to dump pretty much every penny out of it, playing 75, 150 limit and 150, 300 limit.
Oh, my God.
So I was busted pretty shortly after that, or near busted.
Oh my God. But
I went through the process again, and I wound up doing the same thing a couple more times. I've definitely ran up money and lost it all several times over the course of the last 4 years. I've taken plenty of shots.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
This is Downtown Chad Brown, and I'm in the studio with Auntie Up.
All right, we got a repeat hand of the week, or actually a repeat swag winner for the second week in a row, Chris.
Yeah, good, because I thought at first we were just going to do another hand that we did already. That'd be
kind of
terrible.
Yeah. Well, we could probably do it completely differently this time. We probably have no idea how we did the first time. So, that's the rules. You know, no new swag. So, no deck of J Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com, the official playing cards of Auntie Up for Jared. Who is from Cincinnati, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
My old home state of Ohio.
Ohio.
And he writes in with a home game hand, Chris. I don't know. We had last week was a home game hand, right, too?
Yeah, we've been getting a nice little mix lately. I love the home game ones, though, because it feels more real to me.
More real. All right. It's not that fake online stuff. Or those Mirage hands that you play at the local casino.
Exactly.
So, this is real poker, folks.
Real poker, baby.
Strap in for this one. All right. It says it's a $40 buy-in home game, single table, 8 players, no limit hold'em, 5,000 units to start.
Wow.
All right.
Yeah.
$40 tournament, single table, 8 players, no limit hold'em, 5,000 units to start. He breaks down everything here for us. The field. 2 quite inexperienced players. Quote, do I burn one before the flop? 3 mildly experienced players. No quote inserted. And 3 moderately experienced players, including you. Of course you're moderately experienced, Jerem. You listen to our show.
Absolutely. That puts you in the moderately experienced players club automatically.
Exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So that's our breakdown of our eight players. Here's the situation. I feel like I'm on the Wolf Blitzer. In the situation room. Third level in, one player out. Our hero has been hit by the deck early. One with quads over a full house. Oh, that's always fun.
Wow.
But somehow did not take the guy's whole stack. Oh, that's never fun.
Nope.
Also made a showed a made flush and a two pair showdown. But he's also been quite a bit aggressive, which makes sense considering the field here, I would think.
Yeah.
Gonna want to steer clear of the other two moderately experienced players, but put the heat on these other five players.
The heat.
He is up to 9,500 in chips and is the big dog at the table, the chip leader, Chris.
All right.
Blinds are 75,150. All right. Under the gun, who has a stack of 6,500, min raises to 300. When, oh, when will we be able to eradicate this disease from the earth? Is there no one out there working on a vaccine for the under-the-gun min raise?
Oh, man. We got to get in touch with Glaxo Welcome or whatever the hell
exactly.
That company is.
I am donating to that charity. All right. The min raise and one caller, and then it folds around to us on the button where we have the ace of clubs and the nine of clubs.
Okay. Am I supposed to say something here?
If you'd like to, yes.
All right. I think I'll just call the raise. It's not that great of a hand. I have position, so that's what I want. I want to be in position and see a flop rather than, you know, I mean, I understand he's been real aggressive, but somebody who's min-raising under the gun, whether they're terrible or great, and he doesn't say which one they are, obviously has a hand they like enough that they're going to play no matter what you do. So I think I'm just going to call here. I got the right odds to call. I'm in position. I got a suited ace. It's not a great ace, but, you know, especially under the gun raiser, he could be dominated. But I'd like to see a flop.
Yeah, I wish I knew which of the players was under the gun here.
Yeah.
Whether it's you know, one of the inexperienced, in which case I would not be as worried as if it was one of the more experienced players. Because I would think a more experienced player, when they do this cute little dog and pony min raise under the gun, usually has something. But here's the thing: we got 9,500 in units. It's 300 to call. I don't want to get in a habit of making these calls. But early on, you know, we'll peel one off here for 300 and
sure.
See if we get a flush and stack this guy, right?
That's what I would do. I would call.
All right. Jerem has not listened to the show before finishing this hand.
Oh, so he folded. And that's the end?
No.
Oh, okay.
He re-raises the 825. Now, before you groan, he said, the caller has been weak, but the raiser has been quietly chipping up, and I'm hoping to get some info about the strength of his hand. I have a lot of chips, and maybe my image will let me take it down here since I've shown down some very good hands. If not, I'm willing to play pot control post-flop or get out. What do we think about that analysis?
Well, you know, if he thinks that he's going to get heads up because of it, you know, because that one caller was weak and you're in position against somebody under the gun, maybe you can outplay him. But again, he just said he's been chipping up, but he doesn't tell us if he's a good player. So I don't know if he feels comfortable outplaying this person. And he also said he has a reputation for being aggressive.
Right.
So, you know, if they're not going to give you credit for, like, ace-king here, you know, so your ace-nine might be exactly what they think you have. So I don't know. I don't like the re-raise, to be honest with you. I don't mind having multiple people in the pot with me when I'm in position with a suited ace like that. I mean, it's not like I'm trying to make ace-king or queens hold up against one opponent. You know, I'm just trying to see a flop on my ace-nine and see what happens.
Yeah, and I'm really looking for a club flop here. I'm happy having more customers in the pot, but the thing that struck me is trying to get some strength info about the strength of his hand. My experience has been if someone min raises under the gun, they are going to call almost any raise.
Yeah.
Aside from maybe a crazy overshove.
Right.
So I don't know whether you're actually going to get that information. I think you're just going to get somebody who goes, "All right, fine, whatever. Here's another 525."
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Are you looking for him to re-raise, you know, and then you'll have your answer? I mean, that's the only thing you could hope for to really get information. If he just calls, you're not getting any information out of him. So just call.
All right. But, you know, at least he's willing to play pot control post-flop or get out, and that's good to hear.
Yes.
That's important. All right, the blinds fold. The undergun calls fairly quickly, and the mid-position limper folds as we had hoped. So apparently we are heads up with the under the gun. Pot is 1875. Flop comes 8 of hearts, 8 of clubs, 10 of clubs.
Well, other than the paired board, that's pretty sweet.
Got our 2 clubs. You know, we got the 9 in the middle, so we can go runner, runner first straight if we had to. Can't imagine our under the gun player has an 8, so I'm not worried about that, right?
Right.
Maybe pocket 10s, but that's the only monster under the bed, and I am no longer looking for monsters under the bed or in the closet or anywhere. Except on Nightmare on Elm Street. That's new Scott Long.
I have to agree with you. I have to agree with you. I can't put him on an 8. Not even sure I put him on pocket 10s as a possibility. Still feels like, you know, what happens? I got to know what happens first.
All right. The villain checks to us.
Okay. Well, then again, I mean, if he has pocket 10s, he would check there. If he has an 8, he might check there. But we don't put him on an 8, so really the pocket 10s is the only hand that I'm worried about. If he has a jacks, kings, queens, whatever, aces, whatever, he's going to probably bet here because of all of the draws that are out there.
Yes.
So
yes.
A check tells me he probably has ace-king. I guess I would bet because I got the nut flush draw, and you know his check is weak. So I think I would bet, let's see, is 1,800 in a pot?
1,875.
I'd probably bet like 1,400, maybe 1,500.
Pretty big. All right, pretty close to pot.
Yeah.
Yeah, here's the thing. I got a bet here, too. I mean, he checked, so he could be weak. I could take it down here. The other thing is I like betting my flush draws.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm in position.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is a little different one because you got a paired board. But we've already essentially dismissed the 8 and the pocket 10, so really we're only worried about, like, you know, king or queen or something if he has pocket pair. But we already think that he would have bet that, too. So I don't know what we're worried about. So I'd like to bet here and get some money in the pot and then, you know, play a little creatively if I actually hit my flush.
Absolutely. I think the best part about it is you're in position. That's why we said just to call pre-flop because now, you know, if you didn't re-raise, your hand would be really disguised if you had just called. And the other thing, too, is you have 2 ways of winning the pot. You can win with the best hand or you can semi-bluff and you can just fold right here. So I love the bet here. I'd love to bet here about, like I said, about 14 or 1,300.
All right, well, hero bets 1,000. It's a little less than you thought, but more than half the pot.
Yeah.
And he says he really hopes his villain has whiffed, but the villain calls after some thought, which puts a little concern in our hero's mind, who is now hoping to see a club, but he also deduces that he's not sure he could have had an 8 in his hand. So I think we're probably all in the same frame of mind here.
Yeah, the call is a little scary. I mean, what could he be calling with? He's not going to have the second nut flush draw here and calling with king queen or something, a club. So it's kind of scary. He might have we might have to hit our flush to win this hand now. I don't know. But
well, again, we don't know the strength of this player.
Yeah.
I really wish we did because a inexperienced player would make this call, you know, think about this and make this call with an ace king, like you said.
Yeah.
Or even ace queen or two overs.
Right.
Yeah, ace
queen.
Two overs.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, you know what? I don't think you hit him. I'm gonna call instead of re-raising, which is what you should have done if you thought you missed. But you know, we don't know which player we're up against. So
yeah.
All right, the pot is 38.75 now. We have 76.75 left, and the villain has 46.75 left. The turn is the 10 of diamonds. The board now is 8 of hearts, 8 of clubs, 10 of clubs, 10 of diamonds, and the villain checks to us again.
Well, now we're hoping for ace-queen, because then we're guaranteed pretty much a chop, or ace-king.
Actually, I'm hoping for king-queen, if you don't mind.
No, you know what I mean. Like,
I would rather have all the pot. That's just me, though. I play crazy.
We put them on ace-king or ace-queen, is what I'm saying. So we're kind of hoping that, you know, he doesn't have we know he doesn't have pocket tens. He doesn't have quads. He just doesn't have them. Can't think about that. And I don't think he has an eight anymore. And if he did, would he really check if he had a 10 or an 8? I guess he might.
At this point, I mean, there's no upside for him to bet this.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think.
No.
So, I mean, if he did have a 10 or 8, I mean, we're screwed because I don't think he would have bet. I wouldn't bet there.
Especially if he has an 8. You know, if he has an 8, he's got to be worried you have the 10 and you have a bigger boat. So
right.
I have no problem checking here. You know, and if our flush gets there, you know, we'll weigh it then. But I have no problem checking here and thinking I may be chopping with this guy.
Yeah, I think this is where we bring back the pot control, is it not?
Yeah.
You know, the call of our raise was a little scary, but not too worried. At this point, I do think we're chopping. I think we both have aces, and at that point, there's no reason for me to put money in on the risk. I mean, obviously, I'd rather take all the pot and split it with him. But I mean, this is a board now where a lot of players, if we make another bet, are going to raise us.
Yeah.
And then we got to make that decision on whether they really do have something bigger, or we're going to want to put more money in on what we think is a chop. I just think it seems much better just to check behind and see what happens.
I agree. Because if he does have a 10, he would check there too, and you definitely don't want to bet into him. So get to the river as cheaply as possible here, and maybe you can win at showdown or at least chop it. So let's see what happens.
If he checks the river, then I have no problem betting again at that point. But right now, I'll keep it. I'll keep this pot at 38.75.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
I don't know if I agree with you either there, though. I don't know if he checks the river, I'm only going to get check raised by a better hand when I just take it down. Either your ace is good or it's not. I don't think they're
yeah, that's interesting.
I don't know what he possibly could have there that would beat my ace kicker unless it's a better hand, like pocket nines or something. So why would I risk more chips? I wouldn't bet there. But anyway, let's see what happens before we get there.
All right. Pot's 38.75. The river is the king of hearts. So our final board is eight of hearts, eight of clubs, ten of clubs, ten of diamonds, king of hearts. And I do have to congratulate our hero here because he has written his hand of the week out like for a four-year-old to read. And I am just a three-year-old, so it's a little bit above me, but I'm doing pretty well. He's just spells it all out there for me.
Well, we don't like that king just because if we put him on ace king, he's now beating us. I don't know what to do here. I'm hoping to see what he does first, and then I'll tell you what I'll do.
All right. Well, he checks.
Oh, he checks to us? Oh, yeah, I'm checking.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's the thing. I will change my mind with a king because that is a scared card. If it was a four or something like that, I still say I'm probably going to put in a bet.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't bet, but you know that's the beauty of the show.
I can't imagine we get check raised. I mean, who's going to check all the way down at the end and then hope that we're going to bet on the river?
Well, the raise isn't the only reason. You're only going to get called by a better hand, too, I think.
Yeah, okay.
No one's going to call you for a chop on the river. They're going to, you know what I mean? Or, you know what I mean? They're probably going to call you with like nines or an eight in their hand, worried that you have the tens.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that I can see.
But anyway, I still check. I check.
All right. Well, our hero says this is bad and good, I think. He was wondering if the villain had whiffed all the way here. Obviously, we didn't hit our flush, but it has trouble putting the villain on the boat. Totally agree.
Yeah.
Especially when he checks again. So is he going for the check raise with a monster? I don't think so. Does he have some middling pairs, 7-7, 6-6, 5-5, that's how counterfeited by the board? Very likely. Maybe I should just check and hope my ace is good. Sure, if you want to play it the weak way like Chris, go ahead. heck, he could have a king in his hand. Ace, king, king, queen, king, jack all seem possible. Absolutely. In the end, our hero decides to bluff at this pot. Way to go! Except I wouldn't do it because the king's there. But any other card, I would have. He says he's not sure he can win it any other way. I feel like if he shoves, he may have the boat and I can lay it down. Well, if he shoves, you're laying everything down, buddy. with 30 to 40 big blinds left at a fairly soft table. But he really does think he's weak. We have a strong image, and even if he has the king, he may lay it down. I don't know about that, unless it's a weaker king. But
if we had bet the turn and he somehow called, then he would have laid down a king on the end, I think, because he would have been more convinced that we had the boat if we bet again on the river. But by you checking the turn and then thinking about betting the river, I just don't think that he's going to believe that you have a 10. And if he has a king, he would call you. So I have a feeling he's going to bet here, and I don't like that idea at all. And the other thing, too, is he's saying, I think he said he doesn't know if he could win without betting. So I don't know if he's considered the chop or not. I don't know, but that maybe that's what he means, that he doesn't want to chop it. Because all the scenarios he put up were hands that he beat, except for the ace, king, king, queen, king, jack, which I don't put this guy, there's no way this guy has king, jack. There's no chance in hell. This guy has king, jack I'll sign over my share of Annie up to to him, and he can try to do something with that.
Yeah, hold on here. Let me rewrite the end of the week here.
But I don't think playing it weak is checking. I think that it's sound. You're only going to get called by a better hand, so why not just check and take the pot or split it?
All right. Well, our hero decides on the fake value bet. I like that term.
Fake value bet. Wow.
And pushes out 1,500. Our villain thinks a long time. Our hero thinks he's pretty sure he doesn't have the boat. the boat sailed long ago.
Unless he has an eight. Again, the eight. I don't think he has an eight. We don't put him on that. But
that could be.
Eight could be a small lower boat. So.
All right. Well, finally, our villain calls and says, "You got me," and shows ace of hearts, five of hearts.
Oh my God. Well, that's what we said earlier, that we're probably chopping. I just didn't think it was going to be that bad of an ace.
Yeah, so obviously we solved the mystery. This is one of the totally inexperienced players at the table.
Yep.
Been raising with ace five and then calling those ridiculous bets.
Yeah, it's interesting. Interesting that he calls that flop with an ace five of hearts. He has a backdoor flush draw. But it's not even the nuts anyway.
Yeah, I mean, this gets back to what I was saying, is even if you thought that your BS alert went off when our hero bet the flop, think there's no way he had a piece of that, you don't want to call. You want to raise.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Well, yeah,
if you're going to put more chips in the pot with ace five in that situation, I'm going to put more than what I need to.
Yeah, I'm not going to just check call.
I'm going to remind him, hey, remember when I min-raised pre-flop? Yeah, this is what I'm doing to you now.
Yeah, here's the monster that was under the bed. That's what I would say to him.
And then I would say, I hope you don't listen to Annie up, because you're not going to be scared of that monster, and I'm screwed.
Oh, man. But we chopped it up, so any parting thoughts?
He asked a bunch of questions, but I think we have them all answered in our excellent, or at least middling, analysis of the situation. So we thank Jeremy for sending in our hand of the week, and of course he knows he doesn't need any swag, but that doesn't mean that you, listener, can't win swag if you send us a hand of the week to podcast@annieupmagazine.com.
Nice job, man. Well, I want to thank Tyler Smith for calling me back. And talking to me about his great run up in Mississippi. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.